Welcome to Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Here's your host, Laura Turner.
Hello and welcome to another special edition of Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. I'm Laura Turner. Our guest tonight is passionate about many things, but right now her work is focused on breaking down barriers for women and girls' participation in sport and physical activity. She wants to see more women involved as leaders within sporting organisations at a community and professional level, and as the Susan Alberti Women in Sport Chair at Victoria University and part of the VU Institute for Health and Sport, she's well on her way to furthering that mission. It is my pleasure to welcome Professor Claire Hanlon to Great Australian Lives. How are you, Professor?
Hello, Laura. Well, thank you.
That's great to hear. Now, firstly, we'd like to acknowledge the sponsors of our show, Tobin Brothers Funerals, who have just announced a three-year partnership with Victoria University's Susan Alberti Women in Sport Chair. They're a great supporter of that initiative. How will this new partnership assist in the work you're doing?
The focus is on creating no boundaries for girls and women in sport. And at Victoria University, we're interested in strengthening industry collaboration, providing evidence through research to help drive change in sport and physical activity for policy and programs, and also to strengthen career pathways for girls slash women in sport. Now, to do that, we need to help build community capacity, and that's where Tobin Brothers comes in, because Tobin Brothers, similar to what Victoria University also focus on, we want to build the mental, social and physical health of in particular, girls and women, and through sport and physical activity. And to do this, we need to help work with communities. We need to build their capacity and to support them as many ways as possible so that people can enjoy lifelong living now that's healthy and something that we can all support and move forward within our lives.
Yeah, look, James McLeod from Tobin Brothers, who I'm sure you know, said of this partnership that to celebrate and make the most of life now, there is a need to make Victorian communities stronger through the provision of opportunities to improve social, mental and physical health, in particular for women and girls. And that focus on social, mental and physical health is encouraging. But in the past, we have sort of focus more on the physical side of things, but that mental health side is so important now too, isn't it?
It is, but so is social. Social connection, particularly after COVID, and to bring people back together again. And that's the beauty of sport and physical activity. It's also something where it's why girls and women and why the focus? Well, globally, Australia is ranked one of the worst performers in 11 to 17-year-old girls, where over 90% who are surveyed reported insufficient levels of physical activity. So that's a huge concern. What does that say in relation to girls who then grow up and be adults? And it's that physical activity aspect that helps with the longevity and a healthy life. So that's why it's important. That's why Tobin Brothers are passionate, and that's why we are passionate and working together in order to help communities open opportunities to encourage more girls and women to participate in sport and physical activity.
Why do you think it is? I mean, I remember as I was, you know, not professional, but I was a very good sprinter and I gave it up at 17. And I remember it being an issue back then that there was always concern about girls as teenagers sort of petering off in terms of their sport participation. What does the research say? Why does it happen?
Laura, it's a really good point. Basically, your age group, a vulnerable age group is your 11 to 14-year-olds. That's for girls where the dropout rate is large. And research continues to show that. That's when girls move from primary to secondary school. It's when their puberty certainly starts. It's when self-conscious and a lack of confidence exists. Then from the age of 17 onwards is where there's another decrease. And that's exactly what you're saying, where you dropped out at the age of 17. And that's moving from potentially high school and moving out to university or to a career. So it's important that we're conscious of those age groups in order to look at, well, how can we help girls and women during this time so that they can overcome their potential barriers and continue with sport and physical activity. Because it's so important that we continue. If we continue throughout our life stage, it certainly shows the health that comes out of this. And an interesting research was also showed that girls who participated in sport, and this research was conducted with women globally around Australia, globally around the world, and what they found was that women who were top executives that were surveyed, 90% of these women had participated in sport when they were girls, and it showed the reasons why they believed sport helped them to be leaders of today is because of the confidence, it's because of the ability to work with teams, ability to complete projects, and their determination. So again, it's not just sport for now, it's sport for life, and how those skills that you develop when you're younger can then be embraced throughout your career later on.
And Professor Claire Hanlon, it is International Women's Day very soon. Do you think in Australia we have a lot to celebrate when it comes to progress of women in sport in this country?
I think we have a lot to celebrate in the context of increased understanding that people are gaining about why more girls and women need to play and lead in sport, because it makes sense for social and economic reasons for an organisation for them to be involved. So there's an increased understanding. The more people that get it means that the more strategies are going to be implemented for girls and women to enable them to be involved. So there are increasing opportunities. However, it's at a pace that is not quick enough. It's at a pace where we, as a society, have an opportunity to really move it forward. There are resources out there. We need to understand to a greater capacity and put more, embed more strategies in our organisations in order for movement to occur at a greater pace.
What about the AFLW? I mean, surely that, and maybe it's too early to research into the impact on young girls and Australian society in terms of young women as to what impact that has had on increasing female involvement in sport.
You can be what you can see. That's a really important saying, because that shows the visibility of women playing sport, girls and women. The same thing, the more women and girls that see other women and girls play sport, the more they can see, actually, there is an opportunity for me to get involved and potentially have a career pathway that leads to AFLW. But that's not only as players. We need to have more women that are visible, that are coaching and that are officiating or umpires as well in AFLW. The more girls see that, the more they can think, you know what, I can continue and be involved with this. And that's important. The more women also that need to be in administration roles, in CEO level roles, as boards and presidents involved in AFLW. That is vital.
Totally agree with that. Before we look into your incredible career and achievements, I want to know about you, Professor. Were you a sporty girl as young Claire Hanlon?
I grew up on a farm. So sport was physical activity was part of our life. We had and we continue to have beautiful parents who are supportive, and that is so key to enable sport and physical activity. Mum and Dad, they were our taxis basically, and going in and out based on the farm that we lived in, and they constantly drove us to sporting events, sporting activities. So, yes, definitely in that capacity. I grew up loving sport and physical activity because it gave me a sense of achievement, empowerment, and enjoyment. And for us, it was also socially, because then we could mix. We lived on a farm. So to go and play sport meant we were mixing with friends. And that's really important as well. So all of those positives. But the more I then became a primary school teacher, and I realised more and more that opportunities were not necessarily available to girls, whether they be in the country, regional, or in metropolitan areas, as much as what we'd received. But the opportunities are there, so are the barriers. And for me, it made me even more determined to knock down those barriers. And apart from being a girl in that context, it also, there are life stages along the way that make you realize that being physically active is important. I had a brain tumor, and one quick, in the sense of recovery, was apart from the amazing family support that I had from mum and dad, was that also the doctors told me my recovery was quick because I was fit. And being fit helps with recovery. Again, it goes back to that health side of things. So that was a proactive rather than a reactive stance of physical activity. Some people, all of a sudden, they have a health scare and they realize, oh, I need to get physically active. I need to start getting fit. Mm-hmm. Well, what we're trying to do is say, you know what, let's be fit now rather than waiting for a circumstance to occur. Mm-hmm. And during that time, you'll actually feel better about yourself, and others will also be looking up to you and wanting to, you become an inspiration yourself, and everyone is an inspiration to other people based on the positive energy that they then give. And in this case, it's with physical activity.
Just on, you said you grew up on a farm, so I would imagine that would be somewhere in regional Australia. When you said that there's a barrier for those who grow up in the country as in compared to those who grow up in metropolitan cities, I would be of the presumption that in little towns or regional cities, their sporting football clubs and netball clubs are very connected to the community. So I would have thought it would be that kids from the country might be in an advantage because they're that connected to those clubs more so than in suburban Melbourne. But have you seen different results or different research on that?
No, I'm not too sure with that statement. It's more so in the context where I saw girls from regional, rural and metropolitan areas that were disadvantaged, and it may have been based, they may not have had that family support. Yeah. They may not have been able to be involved for different reasons with sport, and distance could be one of them. And distance is one example where, for example, regionally, people have further to travel potentially, and to attend a sport. So distance is something to consider, but metropolitan people also have disadvantages. There are also barriers, and it's a matter of addressing those and how we look at that in order to see, well, what can happen in order to try and encourage more people, and what resources are out there. Transport's key. Parents are key. Parents play a massive role with supporting children and their involvement in physical activity. So what we find is the more parents that are active, the more children that are active too.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Did you have family members or mentors or role models when you were, a child and coming up to being an adult in terms of sport?
Look, I keep harping back, but my parents were my mentors in the context where my dad was was coaching me with different sports that we did, and then mum and dad were heavily involved in sport themselves on committees as well. And because they're on committees, you tend to play the tennis, or you tend to get involved in your athletics. And that in itself, that's where I go back to the importance of family involvement, and then the children get involved as well. So that certainly was the passion and the mentors in that context, which is why I suppose I'm very much a supporter on people being involved in committees to build communities. But growing up in the mentors, even now I think it's important to have mentors, because you look up, there's always something that you can do more, and there's also a person that you can talk to that can provide you with advice and ground you, and also be in the area where you can say, okay, am I heading in the right direction, or should I be doing something else? We just need people to talk to, and I think mentors are important. I know I mentor a number of people, and I have a couple of mentors myself, informal mentors that I certainly seek in order to further help me professionally and personally.
Professor Claire Hanlon, can I ask, did you have brothers growing up?
Yes, I have two brothers and I have a sister. And we all come from a sporting background, because in one context, also a physical activity background, we had a driveway that was 1.5 kilometres, and we had to cycle down every day and catch the bus. And it was amazing how fast we ended up having to ride, because we see the bus coming and we're quick So, and that's winter as well. Certainly had lots happening. Also the brown snakes. We had a brown snake that we were going past down the driveway at one stage off to the bus stop, and we saw this snake, and I don't think we've ever ridden as fast. We could have gone in the Olympics, I'm sure, and that was in primary school, to catch that bus. So, yes, there's lots of different experiences with physical activity on a farm. Yeah.
No, I was just going to ask if you had brothers. I'm sure that, well, I can't presume, but they might have been cricket or footy players, and whether they let you play too, because that's always a part of it as a girl, isn't it?
It is. I think the beautiful thing is I was the eldest. So by the time my brothers got to that age, I'd moved on. And so if anything, it was my sister and I teaching our brothers on the tennis court and having a hit of tennis. It was more the other way around. And I think that may help. Interesting. That may have also helped in the context of saying, well, women have just as much to offer as men do. Regardless of age, and this probably was a start in my younger years.
Well, this is Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives, and Tobin Brothers Funerals are proud supporters of International Women's Day and Victoria University's Susan Alberti Women in Sport Chair. More with Professor Claire Hanlon in just a moment.
You're listening to Great Australian Lives with Laura Turner for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
Welcome back to Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Our guest tonight is Professor Claire Hanlon, a Victoria University researcher at the Institute for Health and Sport and the VU Susan Alberti Women in Sport Chair. Now, we've had Susan Alberti on the show as a guest before, and it was one of my favourite shows, Claire. She's, as you would be far more knowledgeable than me, a remarkable woman. What has it been like working with Susan and helping build community and organisational capacity to create inclusive sporting environments for women?
It's been inspirational. Look, Susan's a person who is driven and she wants change, and change in a faster pace than what's been happening. And that's where we get along together. We do have to be patient, though, which is hard for both of us. But at the same time, Sue has been incredibly supportive with the work that we're doing to further strengthen industry collaboration and to create no boundaries for girls and women. It's interesting when I'm talking to Sue, Sue's saying, well, when can we do this? Or how can we move this forward? And that just typifies Sue's personality in the context of, well, let's move forward.
Let's go.
The best thing is let's move forward together. And I think Sue, the more voice that goes out into the industry in order to try and encourage change, and Sue's a prime example of that, the more hopefully implementation does occur and that certainly encourages impact. And that's what we're after. It's well and good having something like research, as Sue knows, but let's turn that into practical outcomes, and let's turn that into change in the industry, because that's what we're after.
Now, practical outcomes, I'm sure, is something that you're well familiar with. You mentioned you're a teacher, or you were a primary school teacher, did you say?
Yes.
We have all the qualifications. I can see in the notes here many credentials at ACU and Federation University and Victoria University as well. You were a busy woman before you got to the position you're in now.
I think it's a matter of, fortunately, we can have a number of careers, and where does it go? And back in the era where you're growing up in the country, if you want to get out of a town, you either need to be a nurse or a teacher. And so I certainly was a primary school teacher, was what led me into primary school teaching. But then opportunities arise from there. So I think by the age of 29, I was going to have four children, be married, have four children and be a teacher. And that's it for life. Now, none of that was achieved in that context. By the age of 29, I'd moved on from primary teaching. So I think it just shows how life can take us on different pathways, and it's up to us as to where we want to embrace those. And when we do, just go with it and see what else comes around. And The opportunities are incredible if you open those opportunities up.
When you were a teacher, you would have seen firsthand the participation rates and the, I guess, desire from little girls to be a part of sport. Do you still draw on that experience now in your current role? What did you learn there?
I learned that parents were incredibly influential. Mm. They were the ones that took children to not only sport, but wanted their child involved in extracurricular sport. It was the also, and I keep bringing parents up, but they really are important. And it wasn't until I became a primary school teacher that I realised how vital and they were to the upbringing of a child from a sport and physical activity perspective. It's interesting also in the context of children and the positive attitude. The influence that school has itself on sport and physical activity, if girls in particular enjoy the sport, they have fun, they then ask their parents, can they, i.e., be involved in that out-of-school activity? And so there's your link, and that's so important to get that because, again, when we're talking about 11 to 14-year-old, which is a vulnerable age group, we can get them before that time to build up their confidence in sport and their fundamental motor skills and their confidence. Chances are that will help them through those vulnerable years and keep them moving. And I think that's where school plays a really important role to ensure that it's fun, that those developmental fundamental skills are there, and also that there's a link between school and community.
Aside from parents, and I know they are a huge influence, and listening to you, it sounds like they most certainly are. What are the other barriers for young girls and young women? Is it socioeconomics? Is it self-confidence? Is it, as we have talked about, sometimes it's geography. What else do you see and did you see in your time as a teacher that held girls back?
Lack of confidence, lack of enjoyment, also the time that it takes to participate in the sport. And you might think of cricket and the afternoons that used to take and the cost as well from a parent perspective. And that was really from 9 to 14-year-olds, their key barriers. If you look at it from over 15 plus, it's the poor health, the injury and the lack of time. And so it's a matter of understanding those barriers and how can we turn them around into drivers, make them enjoy sport. And I think it gets to the stage where the older women get, girls to then turn into young women, the sport levels decrease and the active recreation increases, like walking, running, going to the gym, swimming. They're popular at that age. But I think that shows for sport. And more sports are doing this now in recognition of sport. They're actually involving non-competition stages with sport. So you can have different channels. You can have a channel for competition and you can have social sport. And that is really important because that's what encourages and retains girls as well as women.
You were recently involved in a project around sport uniforms for girls. What's the point of that and why is that important?
What we find is that you could have fantastic facilities, you could have great programs, but if you've got sport uniforms that girls don't feel confident in wearing, you're going to be flat out trying to get them to the venue. And what we found, and again, let's go back to 18 to 14-year-olds, they lack confidence. So, and it's also when they move into the primary to secondary school year. And if you have a sport uniform that they don't feel comfortable in, they're not going to want to go and out and play. Mm. And what we found in the study, and this was a Australian study, it was Victorian and then expanded to Australia, but what we found was that girls preferred function over the fashion of uniforms.
Really?
That girls preferred wearing shorts. They preferred not to wear skirts and they preferred to wear T-shirts. They also wanted choice because if they had a choice, they felt empowered, a choice where they could wear long-sleeved or short-sleeved T-shirts or pants, that they could have a choice in leggings compared to tracksuit pants. It was so important for them. And also the majority of girls preferred no unisex designs. It made them feel uncomfortable. They wanted uniforms designed for girls. Now, these findings, look, there are a number of the findings that anecdotally we know. And after being on radio and the responses I've received online from women as well as girls in the context of saying their experience and how wearing the uniform that they had, they actually dropped out of sport purely because of it. They hated wearing the bloomers or they hated wearing whatever that sport uniform was. So that reinforces anecdotally that these changes need to happen. But the thing is, what this study does, this provides the evidence. The evidence for parents, the evidence for schools, the evidence for sport clubs to then say, and we've got this in an infographic and you can download it on the Change Our Game website, which is supported by the Victorian government, or from the Victorian University website, an infographic to help guide as to what girls want. And that hopefully will help create change. Now, 2 days after this research was launched, I had a council contact me and say, we want to link with you because of this research. It's inspired us to change our local policies and practices. For me, that is an impact. For me, that is what keeps you going doing this research, because it shows that industry understand it. They get it. They just need the resources to help guide them along this journey. If we can create this change, even through simply not wearing white, because girls, particularly with materials, and this was certainly something, they wanted material that hides sweat, that was breathable, that was stretchy, and had dark-coloured bottoms. And if we could change it so that girls didn't have to wear white shorts, that they didn't have to wear white bottoms, particularly the amount of girls that commented about their, you know, their periods and the uncertainty, and that turned them off completely because of the white shorts. If we could do something small like that, and if then that can help either attract more girls or retain girls in sport, isn't that a good thing? And that's where we as a community can help and change.
What about the participation or the involvement of, you know, sort of co-ed sport and or schools that are all girl or all boys? Do you see a difference in participation of girls if they're at an all-girls school as compared to a co-ed school? Because I bring it back to myself again, but I remember being a young girl at a co-ed private school, and it was always in the back of your mind because we were wearing bodysuits as sprinters, you know, like Lycra, almost bikini top and Lycra bloomers, and you were always aware the boys are watching. I'm sprinting right now, but I've got a wedgie. The boys can see, you know. So do you see girls who just have girls-only teams or schools doing better?
What we found, particularly with this sport uniform study, was that girls in co-ed schools, they preferred longer sleeves and longer pants for exactly, Laura, the reason you're saying. Where girls in girls-only schools, they weren't perturbed about that as much. And when we got brilliant feedback, for example, with the shorts, even if there were shorts, but to have them two layers, so the inner layer was tight, the outer layer was loose, so that when the girls are stretching, they don't feel they're exposing themselves. So, again, it's looking at how the uniforms can create that comfort and that confidence that girls need. And that's exactly the difference in that context with co-ed versus girls-only schools from a uniform perspective.
Can well understand that. Well, this is Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Tobin Brothers Funerals are proud supporters of International Women's Day and Victoria University's Susan Alberti, Women in Sport Chair. More with Professor Claire Hanlon in just a moment. Welcome back to Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. I'm Laura Turner. Our guest tonight is Professor Claire Hanlon, an incredible woman with all sorts of experience in sports for girls, teaching girls and getting women and girls more involved in sport in Australia. But Claire, you were director of Gymnastics Australia and of the Oceania Gymnastics Union. I can imagine as COVID unfolded, you would have felt the hurt on a different level to most Australians that those involved in these professional sports would have felt as, say, the Olympics were cancelled in 2020. You would have known more than most what that would have done to professional athletes.
It was a tough year last year, and it continues to be a tough year for sport, and it will continue to be a tough year for a few years in a different way. I think we learned very quickly last year about how to try and immediately not plan ahead and look at what we can do now. From an organisational perspective, it also strengthens people and looking at how can we work together. And I think that's a really big thing too. We need to strengthen forces. We need to look at moving together with our journey, and because our resources are scarce. And sports are voluntary. You know, very much sport is run by volunteers, particularly at the grassroots level as well. And even in my director positions, I volunteer in those roles. And it's really important to look after your volunteers, but at the same time, ensure that we're aware of what's happening globally as well as within Australia, and with what we're doing too, whether it be in our board roles or from an organisational governance perspective. And I think that's what we need to look at, and be mindful of the athletes too. If we had, and this was on the news as well, where there were athletes that had, you know, that were looking forward to the Olympics, but then motivationally, it's been another year. And even then, is it running? And I think that's really tough on athletes. And what about athletes that really had run out of, this was their last one, 2020. So it really is tough for them.
Athletes train to peak at a certain point, and then you reach burnout after that. So something like the Olympics, as you well know, is years in the making in terms of the build-up of their abilities and their body. So to have that taken away, there's all sorts of sports science behind how they will get back to that point with a different time frame for the next Olympics.
Psychologically, it's massive. And it's a matter of, again, the team working together, not only the coach, but all the team around the athlete and moving that forward. And how do you do that together? And I think that strengthened forces. There's got to be positives that have come out of COVID. And if it means that's that connection and looking at resources and how they can work stronger together, that at least is something positive, hopefully.
In terms of community sports and lower level, obviously, than those who are lucky enough to be in the Olympics, have you seen research or been a part of research into the impact of the loss of that through COVID and the psychological impact of that?
I think it's not only the psychological aspects, but it's also the volunteers. Are the volunteers coming back? It's also, are the members? Because I know, for example, with parents who were used to driving their children around every night to sport activities, then COVID came about and they didn't, and they actually enjoyed not being the taxi every night. And so does that mean that children, instead of participating in three sports, are going down to one or two sports? And if that's the case, that also has implication on local sport clubs. So it's a very much of a domino effect as to what's happening here, and seeing really what comes out in 2021.
Speaking of 2021, in 2018, you were an inductee in the Victoria Honour Roll of Women, recognised as a change agent for women in sport. That was from the Minister of Health. Was that high on your, I guess, career highlights? It must have been a real honour to be a part of that.
It was an incredible honour. But, you know, I think honours happen all the way. This sport uniform study, to have a local council 2 days later and contact me saying, this research has inspired us to create change, how can we partner with you to make sure this happens, for me, is an energy booster. That's an honour as well. So there are honours in different ways, and it's what gives you that energy to keep you going and whatever it takes. And if it's it's to have the Victorian Honour Roll in 2018, definitely keeping in mind that regardless, it happens in many ways.
Absolutely. I'm sure it does. You've achieved some incredible things in your career. This is Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. And in these challenging times, Tobin Brothers offer a range of very practical solutions to help you plan a funeral and pay tribute to your loved one. For more information, visit tobinbrothers.com.au, and more with Professor Claire Hanlon in just a moment.
You're listening to Great Australian Lives with Laura Turner for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
Welcome back to Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Tobin Brothers now offer fully live-streamed services so that anyone who could not attend the funeral of a loved one can still view the service and participate. Our guest tonight is Professor Claire Hanlon, who is on a mission to help create inclusive sport environments and opportunities for women and girls. Now, Professor Claire Hanlon, in the context of that, in the context of almost post-COVID and the damage that that did to women's involvement in sport, what next? What do you tackle next as someone who's trying to, pedal behind the scenes and get women's involvement increasing?
A great opportunity is getting women involved in strategic decision-making, because we're at the rebuild, restructure stage of sport. And what has been lost in the past was that they tended to be male voices that were driving strategy. Now, this is a really good opportunity. Let's take advantage. Bring in people from culturally diverse as well as from gender diverse backgrounds. Get their voice about how a sport can move forward. And that's something I'm really keen on promoting, and say, when they're saying we're doing strategy, we're looking at decision making, I turn around and say, well, who have you got involved in those decisions that are making that? Got to make, because we need different lenses. If we're going to create change, we need different lenses to drive that. That is really important. Another important aspect is, again, focusing on the mental, social and physical health now, people enjoying life now. And that's where Tobin Brothers is fantastic, because they're working lots in the community to drive this, and that's where we're joining forces to also enable that to happen from a sport and physical activity perspective. Women tend to be the a key decision maker in the family. And so if we can get women involved and a family involved in sport and physical activity, the children look up to them. And that's a really important point, because then that also encourages them to be physically active. So it's important for families to be involved, for women to be involved, and then that creates a domino effect. So that's another focus now is really working with local councils, working with state governments and national governments to drive that focus of family and women and girls in that sport and physical activity perspective. That's from a leadership as well as from a player perspective.
We've talked all about your professional achievements and your passion to get women involved in sport. But for those who are listening and want to know more about you, what does Claire Hanlon do in her spare time when she's not the director of a board or attending meetings and studying? What else are you doing?
I co-founded a trust called the Musical Moment Trust. It's to help kids with cancer, and in a unified, it's with Challenge, and Challenge is an organisation that helps kids with cancer. That is incredibly inspiring, because that's, you're looking at things that ground you. Prime example, we provide scholarships each year, and honestly, the applications and reading about the children, and particularly last year, and you're looking at a vulnerable community. Here's a prime example of children and how they're suffering in a big way. The amount of applications we received last year was incredible. Right. And that's something where it's like, what can we do to further help? And for me, that's important. So that's something I do outside.
Tell me you play a sport as well.
I'm in a running group with group of women who for the last 23 years have been running on a Saturday morning. And so they've gone from pushing prams to now celebrating 21st, and that's summer and winter. And so awesome. We run 4 to 6 kilometres, and we talk all the way around, but then we have a coffee at the end. So there's beautiful. A prime example of that social interaction, but getting fit and starting off a weekend with something active, and that's a positive that we just rely on incredibly.
Good on you. It has been an absolute pleasure and an honour to have someone of your stature chat to us tonight. So thank you, Professor Claire Hanlon.
An honour, and keep up the great work. It's great what we're doing, Laura. So thank you.
Thank you very much. If you've enjoyed our chat with Professor Claire Hanlon tonight and you'd like to share it with a friend, subscribe to the Great Australian Lives podcast. This is Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. And of course, join me the same time next week when we celebrate another Great Australian Life.
You're listening to Great Australian Lives with Laura Turner for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.